football on off the ball.
Well, I think man management is far more nuanced nowadays, as you're suggesting, because the dressing rooms have changed. You've got players from different faiths, different cultures, different communities, and you've got to reflect all that. These are player whisperers as well as player shouters.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Will it ever stop raining? No, it would seem. But amazingly, I'm just talking to Eddie Scally from Gorn a few minutes ago, and he said it hasn't rained at all in Gorn after talking to a guy who's in Kildare and said the field beside him is under 2 feet of water. Will Punchestown go ahead on Sunday? We hope so. At the moment, Gorn is actually pending an inspection potentially regarding frost. So that's their concern, not so much rain, even though the Thiestes was run recently on almost unraceable ground, and it seems like it's pretty much been raining ever since. Later on, Sam Norris from our sponsor, William Hill, will join us. And this pod is free to air, and Tom Malone's views are free to air. Tom Malone, how are you?
I'm good. I'm looking out at very sodden fields myself here, Johnny. Actually, I should be in the studio there beside you, but I live down quite a narrow country road, and so we are kind of trapped at the moment, unfortunately. Such has been the level of rainfall here over the last, I say 24 hours, but it's more like 24 days.
Where's here?
I'm not too far from Ferry House, so just kind of between Rathost and Shocklin in Meath. So, yeah, it's been very, very wet here for the last couple of days, but really all this year.
I guess we can at least reflect on the fact that the Dublin Racing Festival went ahead, and you know, the fact that, you know, we haven't lost too many meetings so far. But what were your highlights from the DRF?
I just thought it was a miracle that went ahead, really. But I suppose one of those things about Leopardstown, isn't it, that just the never underestimate the drainage there. It's just unbelievable. I mean, the place was literally submerged on Monday, Tuesday. And in fact, you know, within 7 days, they had 2 days racing there, found racing lines. What a brilliant just facility, and well done to Peter Rowe and all the Leopardstown team there, because that was exceptional. Yeah, I mean, the Willie Mullins novice Dr. Steinberg, I know you put him up as a lay, but I couldn't believe the performance he put in. And even during the race, I couldn't believe he was going to win the way he pulled. So as regards stars, I thought he was absolutely exceptional. As regards everything else, it's kind of a bit of a muddle, isn't it? Because in previous years, I suppose it's really cemented cases. But this year probably left sort of a few more maybe questions than answers. I don't know what you thought.
Yeah, I just feel Ben Pauling's comments on Racing TV were really interesting, I felt, in that he feels horses will have left their Cheltenham behind potentially at the Dublin Race Festival. And I wouldn't be surprised if that were the case. Like, I mean, if Barry Conn were here, I'd tell him the same thing. Like, I don't think they should have run Marine Nationale on that ground. Like, really.
100%.
Never travelling in the race. Like, I was like, fair enough, the Dublin Race Festival is great, but like, it's not Cheltenham, and this is not his ground. Like, in any, like, even if the race were at Cheltenham, I probably wouldn't run him.
I agree completely. And look, I would say there's probably a little bit of pressure on trainers to ensure that, you know, there's a lot of tickets sold. It's a big spectacle. It's a big part of the calendar. But yeah, Ben Pauling's a great man for a quote as well. So that's an enjoyable aspect of it. And I love, he's another fella that I like to see having good horses, because we just see more of him. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, it's a long season. There's plenty more to come. You know, even the far side of Cheltenham, just thinking about what's down the line. You know, if you have a decent bit of ground at Aintree, a decent bit of ground at Punchestown, and see what happens at Ferry House, there's plenty more, you know, prize money up for grabs. And yeah, it's not an invalid point, even though it sticks in my craw to see people go, oh, we'll hold and we'll wait back for this. But really, if you're pulling the guts out of a horse, you know, with that tight, no, sort of 5-odd week turnaround between the two meetings, it's not an ideal situation. But like, I mean, even for Leopardstown to have winter ground is such a rarity anyway. You know, I mean, normally you're complaining about Leopardstown having good in the going description at Christmas, or it's too dry, or, you know, even it's too quick in the height of summer because of the drainage they have is so incredible, and the rainfall they get versus so many other parts of the country is so minimal. So just to have winter ground was just unique in itself, really.
It was. And speaking of unique, we might have a small chat about the stable visits that took place this week. Just in relation to the comments Willie Mullins made about Mighty Park, how good he might be. He's a son of walk in the park like Duvan, although I think he likened Faheen. But he's fourth favourite in the Supreme, and Willie has like a horse called Leader Dahlia, who's still 20-1 with one bookmaker. And despite El Kairos being talked of as the fastest horse pretty much Gordon has ever trained, and Talk the Talk being, you know, walking the walk and talking the talk for Joseph O'Brien, we've a strong British favourite. And like, that's it, just for me, I'm looking forward to this Cheltenham more than I have in many years.
Absolutely. And you know what? I know a lot of people love it, but I feel like the way the anti-post markets have gone, I've kind of wrecked Cheltenham a bit. You know, there's a total overreaction to absolutely everyone, particularly in something like the Supreme, where we must be on, what, our eighth or ninth different favourite in the last 8 months at this stage. And, you know, it was becoming utterly ridiculous where any horse that sort of won a novice, no matter how obviously poor the quality of the race was, well, there you go, you're 5-1 for the Supreme. And it's like, all right, just calm down. Like, Shishkin was 10-1 widely available on the day he won the Supreme. You know, it's just cool the jets a little bit. And obviously, look, bookmaker is different now, and the way people punt is different, and it's all going to go into, you know, rolled up multiples and stuff like that, where you can end up with with big liabilities on the day. But I think it's a brilliant race. And yeah, I know maybe Dr. Steinberg's not top of the market, but just that performance he put in. And obviously the UK horse, Sober Glory, like, that was really nice last week. But just for me, the way Dr. Steinberg just seemed to be crying out to go half a stride faster, to find what he did off the bridle, having pulled so hard for basically three quarters of the race, I just thought, wow, that was exceptional.
He was exceptional, and I did think he was too short. In fairness, he did drift.
I don't think you were wrong in your assessment. Like, and to be fair, because I was actually thinking of you watching the race, going poor Johnny. You know, like, and that's what we have to deal with. You know, you're talking about something on a Thursday that's even money, and like, that was wrong. Like, I don't, you were correct. You know, and he drifted significantly. He won well, but the price was wrong. So I can see your. To be fair, Johnny, I can see your argument. There,
he's a funny horse as well, because I'm not 100% sure of the value of the form necessarily, but like, this was a horse that was running effectively in summer tracks, and like, I think he just keeps surprising them.
I would say so. And you know, it must be so difficult with when you have so many horses that can just keep just improving like that. And like, again, and when does Willie really assess his horses? They're coming in, they don't show a massive amount, think, oh, I might be a decent ground horse, okay, we'll pop him out during the summer and see what happens with him. And then he ends up doing that at the Dublin Racing Festival, when he is, you know, quite clearly just improved and improved and improved, and you would imagine he's going to just keep on going as well. Like, you know, that doesn't seem like it was anything close to being his his ceiling. Like,
in relation to, you know, Gordon has said, I've no chance of winning the trainer's title, Gordon Elliott. I do feel, I would say since his days with Martin Pipe, this is something that has, if not defined him, it's probably always been in his head, I want to be the champion trainer. Now, he said he has no chance. Does he have a chance?
He has a little bit of a chance. And you just kind of have to look at his vulnerabilities are just as they were the last time he had a significant lead coming into Punchestown. Just that spread of prize money in Punchestown, and then kind of decisions he has to make, because he doesn't have an obvious kind of Gold Cup type horse for that. What does he do with, you know, with the mare? Could he keep, well, you know, if she goes and wins the Champion Hurdle, you know, does he stay away from Aintree and then hold it for Punchestown? If he wins an Irish Grand National, I would say it's all systems go. And then you think, who else? Well, there's another grade one there in the, it's called the Willowworm Gold Cup now, what used to be the Paris Gold Cup. Like, that's another grade one. Could they reroute Romeo Coolio there rather than going to Aintree with him over 2.5 miles? So like, there is an ideal race there for Romeo Coolio. He'll have 8 to 10 horses in the Irish Grand National, plenty with really good chance. I actually think Croke Park could do run a big race there. You know, And then you're in a decent gap. You pick off those, you keep picking off some decent handicaps along the way. And if you get that gap right up, come Punchestown, that's when it gets interesting. But like I said, it's decisions that are made kind of between now and then. Will he do something like run Romeo Culio in an open race at the Punchestown Festival? It's not something he does, and I know he's spoken explicitly about it. What race to run Romeo Culio in at Cheltenham, and he's not going for the Ryanair because he just doesn't like to do that. But he did it with Sam Crowe. I know it was unsuccessful, but he ran Sam Crowe. Do you remember
Fail.
in the Champion Hurdle? He fell. He did. That was kind of the beginning of the end for that horse, really, wasn't it? So he has done it, but surely he is probably scarred by the experience as well. And you go back to Martin Pike, remember he did it with Glory Victus under a bit of media pressure, ran the Gold Cup, and he fell as well. So maybe there's enough scars there in his professional career not to do it. But if there was a trainer's title on the line and he could run Romeo Culio over 2-1 at Punchestown to give him an extra 100 grand in the bank and put a bit of gap between himself and William was like there's a couple of big 100 grand sales bumpers as well, and the two the Land Rover bumper and the Tattersalls. I think Tattersalls are the ones with a big chunk of change as well. So I mean, he'd have runners for that as well. So there, when you just look through those races that have 100 grand pots, barring the kind of Gold Cup type races, he'll have ammunition there. You bring Tia Hoopoe back for his stares at Punchestown as well. There's another 100 grand in the bank. It's doable, but it's a lot of work.
He's at 17% in Ireland this season, 13% last year. 17% when you're taking on Willie Mullins is fair going. And like Gordon,
it's phenomenal.
Yeah, he does train a lot of fairly ordinary horses as well. Like, so it's really good going.
It's incredible. Look, this is such a big year for him. He's and it's kind of come in a little bit under the radar as well. He probably started a little bit slower than he has in the past. Normally we used to see him having those sort of 8-9 runners or 8-9-10 winners at Down Royal, and a couple of horses got turned over at short prices, but he's just rolled into every weekend since then, hasn't he? And the Christmas he had is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, we were talking, I think he'd had something like 17 or 18 winners in a couple of weeks. Like, it was just crazy. And whether or not he like, I think you asked him about it. You asked him on a media day, did it really kind of push him on it? He's I think the fact he's not thinking about it so much, maybe he's doing the opposite of manifesting a bit at this stage, having talked about it so much earlier on in his career, maybe just letting it happen now, and things maybe happening a bit easier for that.
It'll probably still be dependent on the strength of Willie's battalion at Punchestown. But like, if we get into a scenario there where, like, I wasn't necessarily mad on this when Martin Pipe would be going for the title and they'd be running horses three times in the same day and stuff like that. Like, if it gets a situation where Jigginstown and Michael O'Leary can really make a massive impact in getting him potentially over the line and other owners, considering the backdrop of the loyalty that Gordon has gotten from these big owners relative to some others, shall we say, that's going to be a really interesting narrative if we can take this great season to Punchestown.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it'll take. As much as I talk about those big races, well, you kind of just have to keep picking away at the raggle-taggle stuff during the week as well, which, as you mentioned, he does have plenty of horses that will be eligible for decent enough handicaps over the course of the season. So many novice hurdlers over the course of the year. By the time you come to later on the season, you can begin to drop them into more open handicaps where there's plenty of prize money to be had as well. Obviously, he dominates handicap chases as is, and he'll have plenty of cross-country runners as we've seen. So, it's just those open grade ones where he could that's just look that's just what it's like. You've seen the likes of where Willie comes in and he has literally 6, 7, and 8 in an Irish Gold Cup or John Durkin and stuff like that. He just needs more grade one open chasers. It's not for the lack of looking for them, it's just these horses are hard to come by.
What do you like in the Gold Cup before we move on from Cheltenham? It's now with William Hill, it's 4-1 the field, top price. Factofile, who obviously isn't in the race. Django Bay, considering the price he was at Cheltenham last year, second favourite, hard to believe. The Jukebox Man, 11-2. Sevens Bar with Galopin Deschamps, I can't have him at all myself. Haiti Couleur, would be more of a contender for me potentially. Spillane's Tower now is only 12-1. If anyone backed him at, what was he, 50s before Cheltenham, he or she is in a good place. What do you like?
If you will indulge me some after time, in the two horses I've tipped up on the pod over the last couple of months have been Jukebox Man and 80 Color. So
yes.
They are the two I've popped up at sort of 10-12-1. And I'm not really for turning. I mean, forget us. I love 80 Color. I just love the way he jumps and gallops. And, we're not good. The each way price is gone now, but nothing new is going to happen between now and the Gold Cup. So it's just kind of going to be chat, isn't it? I just think, I can't look. Django Bay is a horse I just can never really have on my mind. I don't know why he leaves me so cold. But, Fact of File, top in the market, he's still, if you had a doubt about him staying at Leopard's End, how can you not have a doubt about him going up another quarter mile? I know he was excellent that day, but yeah, I feel like you have to. At 4-1, I don't think you're getting any value. I'm still with 80 Couleur. And then, I mean, after that, where are you?
I know the way you're thinking. I know it's been a terrible, terrible, terrible prep. I'm not giving up on him.
I'm not giving up on him either. He's young enough. I remember a couple of years ago, we actually spoke after Galopin Deschamps won his Gold Cup. And he had that year. It must have been the start of last season. And just the impact. I remember speaking to you about it. The impact I thought that he had, that Gold Cup had in him. And then he was beaten in the John Durkin, obviously. And then he went on to have that brilliant run up until they turned over in the Gold Cup. Like, maybe we're just underestimating quite the impact a big run in a Gold Cup can have on a horse. And as a younger horse, I know the way you're thinking, it's perfectly feasible to think that has left a mark.
Maybe.
It has. Look, he has run like it's left a mark. Yeah. And look, maybe just to get freshened up, he'll be fine. It's a challenge. But I think at 16-1 or something like that, he's definitely worth it. He's still better than a lot of horses ahead of him in the market. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And as bad a season as he's had, there are still, in some ways, fewer doubts about him doing it, because, I mean, if the narrative at the very start of the season was he's going to be trained for one race, and yes, he has tanked in races since then, well, it's still, your argument is still the same when he was 6-1 at the top of the market versus treble the price halfway down the market. I know there's been plenty of evidence in the interim to suggest he's not the same horse, but, if you're of the opinion that this horse is only trained at one race for the entire season, well, then why wouldn't you have a little tickle at 16 or 18-1? I mean, as I said, there's plenty of horses above him in the market that leave me stone cold and I couldn't have in a moment. So yeah, I can see the logic.
So let's talk Goran. We'll talk Goran Ascot, and potentially we'll talk about a Punchdown. Maybe it'd be okay, Punchdown. I would worry just with the rain that we've had and we'll continue to have. But Goran, as I said, Eddie Scally, the racecourse manager, he just said to me there, they haven't had rain, which I find absolutely incredible, but they are worried about frost, and it will get frosty overnight. We're expecting sub-zero temperatures.
Johnny, that's just, that's our typical Dublin media bias here now. Look, it's like when there was more flooding in South Dublin, it made the news, and the people of Clonmel were standing there, shaking their heads, but absolutely.
They say all politics is local, but weather is, there's been an awful lot of weather lately, to borrow a phrase from Adam and Paul, but it can be very, very local. At the same time, I was amazed, considering how bad it's been in the south in recent times and in Dublin, that Goran seemingly isn't too bad, but we shall see, because it is a nice card at Goran tomorrow. We might start with the 155, Tom. We'll start with the Red Mills Trial Hurdle. This is at 120, yeah. So Kawabunga taking on Stormheart, who looks a very, very nice prospect, was good at Limerick the last day.
Yeah, and it looks to be between the pair of those, and you just look, for me, I just maybe hope that Kambunga's fit enough to do himself justice, and if he does, I thought he'd give Stormheart plenty to think about here. He looks, this sort of 6-4 favourite or whatever, I wouldn't be surprised to see him be a lot shorter than that ultimately, but looked classy, looked really good at Limerick. You win at Limerick, I know what Eddie Scali's saying, that they won't have heavy ground, but it's always heavy enough, isn't it? It's always soft enough at Goran. And as much as I like Cowanbunga, Stormheart just having the run just shades it for me there.
Is this a race that the market just calls?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
100%, isn't it? This is just a race where you don't have a bet until 5 minutes beforehand. Or even if you're there. And fair play to Red Mills, because there's plenty of free tickets going for this. And I don't know if your significant other would be too impressed to be bringing you to Goran on your for Valentine's Day. But I think it'd be a lovely thing to do if you're nearby, and then you can head into Kilkenny afterwards. I enjoy going to Goran to race, but I just think between the pair, Cowanbunga and Stormheart, like you said, watch the market. But yeah, Stormheart looks decent, doesn't he?
She could be sent far worse places on Valentine's Day than Goran Park.
This is very true. Yeah.
And Kilkenny, a cracking city afterwards. 155 is the Shorehall Mercedes-Benz. This is a novice hurdle. Ballyfree taken on Times Are Changing. I was at Navan when this horse won. Now, I know that Court Compliance, like, he's had a couple of sort of costly defeats, but Gary Bannon, the assistant to Bill Durkin, really rates that horse. And this lad, considering his inexperience, I felt he was very good on the day. The form is working out. William Hill goes a top price 11-4 on him. I actually feel that could be a bet.
Yeah, I didn't think there was much in the form between Ballyfree and Times Are Changing. Like, I mean, you know, they've been racing against similar bunch of horses as you get with these kind of, you know, 2-mile 6, 2-mile 7 maiden hurdles. You tend to get a similar bunch. And like, Times Are Changing, I just thought, again, at the prices as they are now, I thought these two should be much closer in the market, Ballyfree and Times Are Changing. And I'd be with Times Are Changing. Like I said, nice horse, real traditional breeding as well. That lovely, not that Ballyfree isn't, but, you know, just a lovely old proper staying chaser in the making, Times Are Changing. And I'd be with him. Again, I don't think there's much in the form between the pair. I think they're very similar levels of form, and so just I'd be with Times Are Changing on the prices.
The Red Mills chase, and this is like something HRI has effectively acknowledged, our prize money at this level. The Red Mills chase, they race for 26.5 grand, whereas the race in there's a similar, like, a grade one contest that we talk about in Ascot, where they're racing for basically four times that, but there are no Irish runners in it, which is a bit strange to me. We have four runners in the Red Mills chase. This is a race that has gone to very, very good horse in the past. If Classic Getaway could bounce back to form, won the race last year, I think he'd have a bit of a life, for all that I guess you expect Imperial Passage to win if he's at his best.
Yeah, look, Sufferer will have the fitness edge, there's no doubt about that. But like, Imperial Pass, even within half a stone of what he's shown, like, you know, he's 3 out of 5 over fences. He obviously picked up something when he was brought down the last day. His form is very strong. He's Cheltenham Festival winner. There's so much to like about him. You just hope he's, like, again, fit enough to do himself justice and kind of go on, you'd imagine, to look at a Ryanair, maybe, if that come up a bit quick, or we'll see. I'd imagine he might head to Aintree or something like that. But again, when you talk about that trainer's title and those horses that are just sleepers, like, there's a horse there in Perry Pass, seen for the first time this year. He's a grade one horse, likely to take on those open chases later on, you know. So that's just what you're up against when you're trying to chase down William Mullins for a trainer's title, and you're trying to take her on with Safaror, who's done all right, but he's not in the same, shouldn't really be in the same league as in Perry Pass, as a, you know, potential proper grade one horse.
I'm throwing this at you, but is there anything else at Goran? That opening race looks interesting. Madness Bell.
I was actually going to say the opening race. Yeah, the maiden hurdle. We don't see too many Paddy Toomey runners on the level. Arroway there, who's obviously has a nice look, decent enough on the flat. So, but yeah, you'd imagine, look, Madness Dell and Manwer de Morand, like, that. You wouldn't be surprised if the three of those ended up at Cheltenham or in graded 4-year-old races later on in the year. So yeah, I thought, mate, look, Madness Dell or Manor de Morand, but yeah, you'd imagine if Manor de Morand, like, there was some tissue prices around for that. I just thought of, if he was a big old price, he's been, you know, he's came down. I know he disappointed at Christmas or in Yeah, disappointed at Christmas after leading when falling in front. You know, he's a 4 year old. I forgive him that. He could bounce back. We know he acts on the go, and so I wouldn't be surprised if Manor de Morand could turn around on Mad Mistel. But that's a nice little maiden hurdle to get things going on Valentine's Day for you in Goran Park.
Who better to join now than Sam Norris on the eve of Valentine's Day? How are you, Sam?
Very good. Yeah, thanks. What an introduction as well, Johnny. Thank you for that.
I'm not going to pry into your love life here, but what is your plan for Valentine's Day?
Haydock Park.
Oh.
The weather being well.
We actually don't need to ask anymore. I'm going to say, We're going to Shelburne Park. Oh, you're bringing me to the Shelburne? No, Shelburne Park. So we're going to the Dons tomorrow night. But I was actually reminiscing with Eddie Lynham at Dundalk yesterday. He was talking to me about the old Phoenix Park racecourse. And he's like, what you do is
Phoenix Park.
So Eddie, he was like, he fell in love with sprinters because he was a dub and he went to the Phoenix Park racecourse long before your time, Sam Norris. But he said there's a bar in the Phoenix Park called the Hole in the Wall that it was reputedly the longest pub in Europe or something mad anyway, but it's quite a unique pub. But you go to Phoenix Park, there'd be a bus outside the Hole in the Wall to bring you to the Dogs, and if you had any money left after the Dogs, you'd go to Chivago nightclub, which I'd never heard of. I had to look it up. Absolute scene, Sam Norris. If I'm ever going to have a stag, it'll be something like that.
I don't believe you've ever heard of the nightclub, Johnny Ward. That's the only bit I'm taking issue with that.
You know me too well, and we've never met.
How old do you think Johnny is?
Yeah. I'm cool, I'm sexy, I'm 43 years old. Let's talk about the Betfair Ascot Chase. I don't know, Sam. For me, there should be an Irish runner in this, really. It's like 99,000 sterling, so that's what, give or take 120 grand. We don't have pots like that regularly over here. It's John Bond against Pick Dory. I'm of the opinion John Bond just wins this. I think he's probably slowed down a bit, but he's still very solid. Unbelievable racehorse in reliability. What do you like?
Yeah, John Bond has been rock solid in the betting all week. And as you say, what he's achieved. I think he's probably, I don't think we're able to say anymore, oh, John Bond doesn't get the credit he deserves. I think he probably does now. Yes, the Queen Mother Champion Chase is still missing off the CV, but nine on foot perfect everywhere else. Obviously goes well here at Ascot. Yes, Let's Say Tom crashed out last time around, so you know we never are 100% sure what might have happened, but
just have slight problems there with Sam.
Nothing of
Sam, we might just come back to Sam in a moment and just see if he can sort out his line. God, this gives me terrible memories of the pandemic, Bugsy, where I think myself, Dan McDonald and John Duggan, we had to discuss World Cups of yesteryear just to fill time. But everything was obviously on Zoom and you did have your little technical problems. On this race itself, the problem for Pick Dory, notwithstanding the fact he's taken on John Bond, is the fact that he was beaten 36 lengths at Ascot when we last saw him.
Yeah, that's the negative for me on Pick Dory, who I still think, you know, the kind of Ascot Chase is his Gold Cup every year, isn't it? This is his real one moment. Look, there's actually something like the going as well is a bit of a, you'd prefer it to be a little bit better, probably for Pick Dory. John Bonnet sort of twos on 4-7, though. I know he should win. It's just one of those ones where I'd just be tempted to back Pick Dory just because this is his Gold Cup. This is his day. And John Bond, I love John Bond, and there are very few horses where you pay sort of about 540 or 580,000 for them, and they actually win the money back.
So we're going to see if everything magically works out. Let's see if Sam Norris is there. Still dreaming of Haydock. Are you there, Sam?
I am. Yes. Can you hear me?
I can. Let's come back in on this. So John Bond, I actually cannot remember a Grade One horse. As much as he's not an out and out superstar, for his reliability, it's quite incredible. Does he just win this? Actually, what price do you think he might go off?
He's been so solid through the course of the week, 4-9, 1-2, around that level. And I think he's only liable to get shorter with day off punters. We haven't really had the multiples in the market yet. Obviously, he's going to be a huge loser from our point of view. The multis won't come until the day of the race. So the liabilities will only grow tomorrow once we get all those multiple punters in. He's been a popular one all week, even though Pick Dory is a real specialist at this trip, 2 mile 5. And he's a real Ascot specialist as well. Obviously won this last year. So you know, conditions suit him down to the ground, but he doesn't quite have the class that John Won does. Edward Stone turns up in all these big 2 mile races, but he's been put in his place numerous times by John Won, and the rest are probably making up the numbers. So yeah, he's a horse we'd like to get beat tomorrow. He won't be too costly in the singles markets, but he'll be in all the ACCAs.
Very unique price he won at last year, Bugsy, 9-5, which is something you'd get like when I used to go to the bookies and you'd have racing from Durbanville and you were kind of questioning your general life when it was like 12 o'clock on a Monday and you're in the bookies. But he won at 9-5 last year. He beat Corbett's Cross, who was favourite. Corbett's Cross is not John Bond.
No, was he ridden by Pierre Striker Stridham down in South Africa back in the day? Just showing that we've all had bad days, Johnny.
Was his son riding? Does his son ride now?
Yeah. He's very old, yeah. I think he retired in the last couple of years, yeah.
Speaking of Shelburne Park, this is not something you would bring up. Do not bring this up in the company of normal people at all. Go ahead, Tom.
Just distracted by Durbanville. Trauma there. But
won the race at 13-8 in 2024. Won the race at 9-5 last year. He might actually be similar odds tomorrow.
Do you know what? I'd be happy. At 4-9, I'd be happy enough to take on John Bon. Just because at 4-9. He can find a way to get beaten. He has a mistake in him in his jumping these days. Seems to be more of a laziness or a concentration thing more than anything else. What a horse. As you mentioned, very few horses pay back the sales price. He did it. And I'd just be happy enough to take him on. Just at 4-9 or something like that, I'd take him on.
We didn't have it on the list, Bugsy, but we might talk briefly about the Rendlesham Hurdle. You're at your beloved Haydock, Sam, and I really like that juvenile hurdle. I've actually laid to a mate. I've laid Narciso Haas for the Triumph, which is like a really, really stupid thing to have done. I'm not sure what's the best. It's like Sam Beckett, to quote him again, it's like how to fail better in terms of that. Like, how do I get out of it and not lose the maximum amount of money? But will something emerge? Will JP McManus's horse emerge in that juvenile hurdle, 12.55?
Yeah, again, it's going to be, you know, a hugely interesting renewal of the Rendlesham. Cabral de Matan has been really strong all week at 8-13. I'm in a forgiving mood when it comes to Friendship, though. I thought there were excuses for his defeat last time around. I thought he looked most progressive prior to that. I think he's a big runner here at 11-2. I think there's a chasm between the front two in the betting, and I'm a little surprised there's so much between the two of them. But we've kind of only really laid one horse all week, and that's Cabral de Matan, who we expect again to be popular tomorrow, and another horse for all the multis, a bit like John Bon.
Do you like getting that Haydock, Tom?
No, but I do like Rubo at Wincanton in the Kingwell Hurdle there. So just at Wincanton, I thought Rubo in that 1.35 had a chance. Again, another of those sort of just these races, a lot of these race days kind of get lost now in the sort of countdown to Cheltenham. But I thought Rubo could be the favourite there at Wincanton in the Kingwell. What's that? 1.35.
What horses are you kind of ducking and diving across the British action, Sam?
Well, the biggest liability at the moment is the 150 at Ascot. A horse is not a huge price. Sometimes at this point of the week, you know, our biggest liability is one that's a massive price. But this horse is 5-2 into 2-1. The Jukebox Kid in the 150 at Ascot tomorrow. It looks a match between him and Thomas Moore, that race. But yeah, we've got a decent liability on the Jukebox Kid. And the other liability at this stage is in one of the kind of derivative markets, the kind of special markets that we have. The 3.15 tomorrow at Haydock, the William Hill Half a Mil Grand National Trial, where we're obviously putting up that £500,000 bonus if any horse can win this and then follow up and win the big one at Aintree in April. Myertown is 66-1 to do the double, win tomorrow and win then again in the National itself in Aintree. That particular bet at 66-1 has built up quite a decent liability. The horse himself is popular, 7-2 from 4-1. It was brilliant when he won the Ultima last season, the festival, one of the most impressive performers of the entire week. His jumping hasn't been that good this season. The yard aren't in great form, but if we could get Myertown beat for the double as much as anything, that'd be a good result.
The reason racing is such a great game is that you can use words like decent liability and not be laughed at, you know, and talk about liability as if it were something good. We have discussed Gore and myself and Tom, Ben, some fascinating races there tomorrow if they survive the cold snap.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the Red Mills has probably been the race where we've seen the most activity from so far. Impero Pass obviously brought down last time around. He was a little unlucky. We stuck him up at even money, thinking he might be a little bit vulnerable on his return after that. punters don't think so. The even money's gone. He's into 5-6 now, or might even be 4-5 actually, in Pere Pass for that one. I like Buddy One as a horse in that race, but he's probably better over hurdles. Safra, they must quite like his hurdles, Mark, because they've been trying to win a big handicap hurdle with him for like the last year, and it's not quite come off. But he's of interest back over fences. So, yeah, that's probably the race in which we've seen the most activity for on Saturday. But we've already moved one in the national trial at Punchestown on Sunday. And Gordon Elliott's won the last 4 renewals of that race and 6 of the last 8. And Pater Merchant is 10-1 into 8-1 for that. One of Gordon's sextet, I think he runs 6 in that race. Been in beginners chases all through the course of the year. Ran against Romeo Coolio, Cocktail Divan, Joystick and Slade Steel's race. Maybe races he couldn't win. It's his first start in a handicap over fences. Up in trip, but he's a winning 3-mile point to pointer. He gets cheap pieces for the first time. He gets a £5 claimer aboard. So interesting already that Friday afternoon, we're laying one for an Irish race on Sunday, 10-1 into 8-1, Pater Merchant for the Punchestown National Trial.
Interesting. Sam Norris is a Wolverhampton Wanderers fan, Bugsy, so maybe you can give him something to cheer. What is your charity bet? What are you looking for at Punchestown?
Well, at Punchestown, yeah, I have one at Punchestown. I just think the bookies on Saturday, like they will be, I'd say they'll be looking nervously at some of those shorties. Like John Bon, Impere Pass, Cabral de Mathan, and then Alexi as well in the Kingwell, all short price horses. And I'd say even if you have shop specials and the like, they'll all just be going in trebles and fourfold. So, yeah, I'd say I'd be watching them pretty closely, those liabilities he's spoken about. On Sunday, actually, is a horse I do like in that Grand National Trial. Horsey's much lower.
2.30 at Punchestown.
Yeah, 2.30 at Punchestown in the Grand National Trial, built by Ballymore. Beaten favourite in the Coral Cup 2 years ago off a mark of 1.39. He ran no race that day. He's been pooching around in beginners chases for the last while into a handicap. First time he's really been upped in trip, and about 12-1, I thought, built by Ballymore there. Looked like a horse who's been handicapped. He's got £19 lower than he was. He's got 120 on Sunday. It was 139 when he was beaten favourite in a Carl Cup. Now, he's well beaten, but obviously they thought even at 139 he could be competitive. So, yeah, I just thought maybe the extreme trip, he handles soft going. And I thought Built by Ballymore was worth an each way squeak in that.
They go with the blinkers, and he's a horse that can race a bit on and off the bridle. What's your charity bet?
I'm going to stick with Rubo for my charity bet there. He's obviously taken on Alexi in that Kingwell hurdle at Wincanton, 1.35 on Saturday. We go Rubo to win.
What price, Sam?
He is second in the minute. I think he's 15-8 at the moment, Rubo. I think we're in 4-6, Alexi, 15-8, Rubo. Although I might be wrong in that. I haven't got the Wincanton price in front of me, unfortunately. Which is
I think he's 2-1. I think he's 2-1.
Two nifties for Tom Malone. Enjoy the racing over the weekend, guys. Actually, before we go, Sam Norris, you're Cheltenham banker at the moment.
You know what? I was really, really keen on Factor File in the Ryanair. But now obviously the Gold Cup's back on the agenda. So I don't know. You know, I still think you can't call him a bank with a price, but I still think Sober Glory, and I have done all season, is a big price in the Supreme. I know the Talk the Talk won impressively last week. I know Nicky Henderson's obviously got his big gun. We had the Willie Mullins horse who absolutely dotted up. He's got a similar name to the Henderson favourite.
Mighty Park, talked.
But there isn't an outstanding candidate in that lineup at the moment, I don't think. El Kairos obviously has the lofty reputation. I still think Sober Glory is a really big price. He's like 20-1, I think, which I'm not going to go as far as to say he's been the best novice hurdler this season in the UK, but I think he's top 3 or 4 and his price doesn't reflect that at the moment. So I kind of still hope they'll go Ryanair with Factor File, but I get why the Gold Cup will be on the agenda now.
The Supreme is... we actually could be here all day talking about it. It's incredible.
Unbelievable race.
If ever, Bugsy, there were a horse that was named for Cheltenham, Sober Glory is not it.
And Willie Mullins might run sober in the race as well. We could have a sober forecast.
There's the sober forecast in the Supreme at Cheltenham. Yeah.
It's something that's guaranteed to get beat, a sober forecast.
Oh my God.
It's not champagne fever anymore, is it?
Thanks for your time, Sam.
Cheers, lads.
Thanks for your time, Bugsy.
Cheers, Johnny. Good luck.
Yeah, that was the Racing Pod episode. I'm not sure what it is. JD is just much better at this stuff than me. He'd have the number off the top of his head. I don't. We'll chat to you next week.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill, 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.